Welcome to Mid-Century Modernism with Monique, your go-to podcast for all things architecture, design, and innovation within mid-century modernism. Join me on a journey through the golden age of design, where every episode brings you fresh inspiration for modern living and unlocks the secrets of this iconic and timeless style. What are we waiting for? Let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mid-Century Modernism with Monique. I am Monique, your host, and I am so happy and honored to have Dave Weinstein on the show today. Thanks for being here, Dave.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
So we are talking about the history of Eichlers. Dave knows more than anyone I have met in the mid-century modern community about Eichlers, mid-century modern architecture, and about this amazing community that we are all a part of. And you have been doing this for 20 years.
Not quite 20 years, pushing 20.
And you have been writing about all of this. You've interviewed hundreds of Eichler owners, hundreds of people that live in this amazing architecture. What is it that you love most about doing this?
Well, I think what I love most is, you know, really meeting the people, not just the ones who live in the houses who get really excited about them, but the ones who help organize the communities. When I first started writing about Eichlers, we were doing a profile, a series of profiles in the Eichler Network magazine, CA Modern, called Neighborhoods on the Rise. And that was based on the idea that a lot of the Eichler neighborhoods and other mid-century modern neighborhoods, over the years, people had lost faith in them. They didn't think much of the architecture, and a lot of them got kind of dowdy, and a lot of the houses were badly changed. But I think that, you know, our magazine has helped contributed to that turnaround, that, you know, mid-century modern rediscovery. And so many people have done so much work in their neighborhoods to organize, to fix up the houses, to preserve the houses by getting second story overlays or historic districts, or even getting on the National Register. And in the course of doing that, a lot of people have built friendships with each other, living together in an Eichler neighborhood. Most of the people seem to like the Eichler houses, and so they trade stories about them, and they'll trade, like, you know, the lights, the globe lights, and they'll talk about how best to fix your, you know, to repair your mahogany siding. So it really is a community, and I've enjoyed being part of that. But also, you know, meeting a lot of the architects and people who were involved. A lot happens in 20 years, including that a lot of people who were really involved in the mid-century design and creation of these homes have passed away. When I was beginning, I was also writing a series of profiles of architects for the Chronicle, some of which got put into a book called Signature Architects. And so I spoke to so many of the great mid-century modern architects, you know, in the Bay Area, you know, George Holmsey and Donald Olson and Mario Chiampi and, you know, Gudi Steinberg. And I got to know some of them I even became, you know, friends with. And it was great doing that. And of course, now they are pretty much all gone. Another person who I got to know pretty well was Ned Eichler. I mean, we almost became friends. We actually became quite friendly. He, you know, we got along. And if it wasn't for Ned, so much of what I may be able to tell you if I have time, I wouldn't know it all. Because he was really a font of information. But other people too. Don Olson worked for Anshin and Allen, who were Eichler's main architects for a short period of time. And besides being a great architect over in Berkeley, Don was a raconteur, and he would tell, like, really funny stories about the, you know, Eichler's architects and what they were really like, or sometimes you don't really want to know.
Yeah, I when I went to your presentation, so you and I have had a bond over the years. I'd say, so you did the treatment of my Eichler film. This was in 2012.
Yeah.
And we've kind of helped each other in the communities, getting to know people, doing interviews and learning. We've become, I would say, a little bit of detectives trying to find out information. And this bond that we share, a lot of people, Ned Eichler used to say, you know, it's so weird that you want to know all this information about Eichlers. It's so weird that you're researching and, you know, what's wrong with all of you guys over at the Eichler Network that you want to know so much. So I think people look at us as, you know, collectors of this information, and, you know, we want to curate and bring this to as many people as possible, which I think is very special. So preservation is very important to you. And you've been involved with all of these communities and organizations. I want to provide links for DocoMoMo and organizations like that. I will do that in the base of this, in the description. But we were talking about the Eichler's Architects when I went to your talk at the Flamingo. What was that? It was a Resort-O-Rama.
Yeah, Resort-O-Rama. Yeah, it was cool. Otto von Stroheim and Baby Doe.
Yes. So can you tell us a little bit about the personalities of the architects, Anchin and Allen and Claude Oakland? You mentioned that Anchin was a very flamboyant person.
Well, it's funny. Going back, I mentioned Don Olson, the architect in Berkeley a few minutes ago. And here's how Don described Anchin and Allen. He said, if Steve Allen is the dough, Bob Anchin is the yeast. You know, Steve was kind of a quiet guy, and somebody else, another architect who worked with them, told me that Anchin would have a million ideas, and Steve Allen would have the sense to figure out which ones were actually good and go through with them. You know, in so much of our writing, we've acted as though Anchin was really the creative guy there. But that's not what Anchin himself said. He really said that both of them worked on the, you know, creative side of all their designs. Mm. It wasn't like Steve Allen just did the business or was in charge of the office or anything like that. Mm. But, you know, they're the ones who created the most famous Eichler thing of all, which is the atrium. And then one story I'll tell you, and this one I told before, but Ned tells it. You know, when Eichler started building homes, he wasn't using architects. He was using either off-the-shelf plans or, you know, not fully trained designers who didn't have architect license. And Anchin and Allen, who had designed a home for Eichler himself to live in down in Atherton, they came by the job site where Eichler was building these very early homes, like around 48, 49. And I guess I'm not supposed to use bad words, but Bob said to Joe, how can you build this expletive stuff? You know better than this, Joe. And Joe said, you know, it's so expensive to work with architects, and building the house, you know, for me, you know, that took a lot. I don't think you guys could do it, and, you know, in a way that would be affordable. And Bob said, well, you know, give us a try. We'll design these houses. You'll see. And we think they can be built, you know, at a low cost. And I started walking away, and then without turning. And Ned says he saw this. Without even turning back, he said, do it. So that's how Anchin and Allen started. So Anchin and Allen really convinced Joe. He was already building modern houses. He wanted to do that. But, you know, they were acolytes of Frank Lloyd Wright. Joe got his interest in architecture by renting and living in a Wright house. He hired Anchin and Allen to do his own house because they had that inclination. And so that's really the birth of the Eichler homes as we know it. You know, it soon spread and other architects got involved. But you asked about the personality. Anchin almost had too much of a personality. He was the kind of guy he would like, you know, he would like go to like Helen Olson, Don's wife, and he would goose her, you know, at a party. He was, you know, Ned described him as kind of a really homey looking short guy, but he had so much personality. And as I said, too much. He drank too much. He didn't exercise much. One story I told at resort, got a few laughs. He was, they had an office in downtown. He built himself a house, Anchin built himself a house across the bay in just past, Strawberry. He figured, wouldn't it be cool if we had a gondola and we could gondola across the bay with our client? So he actually went out and he got a gondola. And, you know, he actually came to a very sad end. He was considered one of the top architects in the country, chosen to take part in a study about what makes creative people think, the creative architect study. I mean, the top architects were in that. And it was kind of sad because I heard so many stories about what a raconteur he was, what a funny guy, how intelligent, how snappy he was. But the people interviewing him saw him at kind of the edge of that. He was trying too hard. He was thinking he commanded a room more than he did. He thought he was funnier than he did. And it wasn't too long after this that he passed away. You know, heart problems, too much drugs. You know, he was taking uppers and downers. And it was very, very sad. And so there was an ad I saw when I was researching his death. It was an ad in the Marin IJ. It said, gondola for sale.
But yeah. What an amazing man, though. What an amazing team, sort of that yin and yang. And I remember you shared with us how Eichler died of heart problems as well.
Eichler, you know, is the Eichler story one of a guy who was a success or a failure? Mm-hmm. He was born in 1900. He died in 1974. So he was 74 years old. He had heart problems throughout his later years. At one point, he had either a heart attack or something pretty close to it. That was around the same time as his bankruptcy. You know, the company went bankrupt in 1964. Mm-hmm. Before 64, it was going like full guns. They did everything on their own. They had their own lumber yard. The lumber would be cut and delivered perfectly packaged to each home site. The people who were nailing them, they weren't contractors that they hired. They were like full staff. Many of Eichler's staff, not so much the carpenters, but everybody else, a lot of them, lived in Eichler homes. It was a family corporation. His mother was involved briefly for a while. His brother, you know, Ned, his other son. Mm. After the bankruptcy, he came back and continued to build for another 9 or 10 years, some of the best homes ever, but it was always a smaller operation. It never had, you know, the reach. I mean, I think a lot of people don't realize that Eichler built high-rises, not just luxury high-rises on Green Street, where he lived in a penthouse, but in the Tenderloin. He built high-rises down in Visitation Valley, almost in Daly City.
I think his work started, you know, starting in 1949 in Sunnyvale, and every tract, I think, got better and better as he went along. And do you think that people were surprised that he went to San Francisco and changed the game? And
you know, from the beginning, he was interested not just in tract houses for entry level. Actually, he never really built entry level, not much, into like the tier or two above that. But from the beginning, he was building luxury homes. Like where he built his own home in Atherton, he was building Lindenwood, which was going to be a large collection of quite upscale Eichlers. Within a few minutes of where we're sitting here, he was building similar ones on the Stanford campus as early as 50 or 51. So from the beginning, he wanted to branch out. But yes, some people thought it was kind of nuts for him to do that, including Ned, who had many arguments with him, who said, you know, Dad, we're doing great tracks. Let's stick with that. We got it down to a science. Let's not build all concrete high-rises in San Francisco. Let's stick to Palo Alto and the peninsula. Marin, okay, that's not too bad, but you know, Sacramento, you want to build in Sacramento? And he did. Wait, hold on. Dad, you want to build in New York? And he did.
Right.
He was going to build a tract in New York. He ended up building just three of them.
And you said that was in Long Island, right?
No.
He had a plan to go there?
He wanted to build, yes. He had a plan in Long Island. But really, where he ended up building a little bit before that was up in Dutchess, right? Not too far from the Tappan Zee Bridge.
Right. Just three Eichlers.
Yeah, he wanted to build a lot more. Three are there.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's beautiful that, well, he went to NYU, and I think he wanted to try to expand, but I think he was such a genius at, you know, especially in Palo Alto doing these homes, and then in Marin, those are really my favorite Eichlers, the double A-frames.
The ones up in Upper Lucas Valley, they're quite pictorial and beautiful.
Yes. Do you have a particular model that you really like? I know we talked about all the different kinds of models. There were hundreds of plans, and they had to fit each lot. So usually the corner lots were different. When we went up to Stantec, we saw hundreds of plans and hundreds of ideas there. So do you have any that particular you love?
Well, I mean, you know, I think most people, many people, really like ones with the atrium.
Yes.
Now, some of the later ones, not only to, and you know, obviously, I don't like to call them A-frames, but I don't think that's quite accurate. To me, an A-frame, the gables go all the way to the grounds. But so I always call them steep gables. But the steep gable model is kind of cool because you can look into it, and then you see another gable behind it, and sometimes even a gable behind that. So it gives it the figure you're looking into a mirror, one of those infinite mirrors. So those are cool. The houses that where you walk from outside, you think you're entering a house, instead you're entering an atrium, and then the ones that also have galleries behind the atrium, you enter from the atrium into the house, but you're still kind of outside because you're in this kind of undefined broad space with sort of a more outdoorsy kind of flooring material, and that's called the gallery. And some of those you're not looking at rooms at that point, but you're looking through the gallery into another garden out back. And so basically you have open space dividing the house. One side is the living area and one side is the bedrooms, but the middle is either exterior space or it's close to exterior space.
Right, right.
And that's pretty cool.
I think that Eichler was such an innovator, not only with design, but he was the only developer allowing African Americans, Asian Americans, and Hispanic Americans to buy homes. And I think what I've seen is that people have such a loyalty and a bond because their families were purchasing homes when no one else would give them a home. You know, they were allowed to do that. And I remember talking with Ned. He said, you know, it was just a business proposal at first. Just, you know, we wanted to make money. We wanted to sell to anyone who was financially qualified. So that was their business mind, but I think it turned out to be something that was so pure and special for the Bay Area. And you talked about that being his legacy. You have some stories that no one else knows about that time and about how he fought the board. I wanted to see if you would share one of those with us. Or his friend Jim Sanjul, you were telling me that.
Yeah, I mean, he was close friends for a time. They did have a falling out. Eichler could have falling out with people. And some of these people he worked with, these were strong personalities. But Jim Sanjul was the guy who was involved with the Teamsters. He was involved with the 1934 general strike in San Francisco. And he was what people called at the time a houser, really pushing to house people who didn't have much money in sound ways. And he and Eichler, they went back and they had a lobby in Washington, D.C., the Federal Home Loan Bank, whatever the Alphabet City title was, number one, to make sure that financing and loan guarantees would be provided for homes of modern design, which a lot of people thought back then were just fly-by-night structures that nobody would ever want to buy again and it wouldn't be worth, you know, financing, and also to, you know, change regulations and rules to eliminate redlining. And so, yeah, they did that a lot of times quietly behind the scenes. But when the National Home Builders Association took a stance against a proposed law, which later became law, that would ban discrimination in the sale of homes, that, you know, the Builders Association said, no, we're not in favor of this, Eichler very publicly quit. And it's interesting, if you go to that association's website now, you see their list of all the people they've given awards to, Home Builder of the Year. Eichler is not there, okay? Even though he was one of the most prominent and certainly one of the best home builders. But to go back to what you were saying about the social thing with selling to minorities, you know, Eichler, his background was not in home building. It was in finance. Then later he worked in his mother's family's butter and egg business. And later he founded, after he was sort of at sixes and sevens, he didn't know where his career was going. He left the butter and egg business, the family business. He opened up a deli selling like frozen chickens and other things right in downtown Burlingame. He didn't know where he was going, but he got into home building. And it's interesting that what got him in trouble, why, number one, he went bankrupt in 64 or so, and why just before he died, he ended up having to sell his home building company to another firm, wasn't that he couldn't build homes. He could, but he was having problems with financing. And why was he having problems with financing? I mean, Ned himself acknowledged that Joe was not in the home building game just to make money. If he was, he wouldn't just have built modern homes. For one thing, he would have broadened the scope of the style of his homes. But, you know, I mean, he was very much into the social utility of housing. He wanted to build housing for a wide variety of people. He didn't write essays about this kind of thing, but he was involved with Democratic politics. He was like maybe the vice chairman of the San Mateo Democratic Club. When Adlai Stevenson flew into town, like in the 50s, he was running for president. It was Joe who picked him up at the airport and drove him wherever he was going, you know. So, no, Joe was involved, and he thought about social issues a lot. I think what he did when he changed his career, he wanted to do something more meaningful than just sell. I mean, nothing wrong with selling butter and eggs, but he wanted to get into something beyond that.
Right, right. I heard he had that, was it a Cadillac that he drove around with the top?
Yeah, that's what people tell me. Yeah, he liked nice cars. He liked elegance. He always dressed well.
Yes.
Brooks Brothers. You know, he made jokes with, was it Ike Magnin, or maybe it was Joseph Magnin, I forget which one. You know, my wife Lillian, she keeps you in business. He really loved the fact that his wife was very beautiful and that she dressed really well. And, you know, again, they lived in like a penthouse. They always lived pretty well. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a big fan of Fred Astaire. He loved baseball primarily because of the elegance and the beauty of the players and what they did.
I love the passion that he had for the homes. And I think we shared when we did an interview in Palo Alto. It was a client of mine's home. You had shared with us that Eichler used to go around and check the colors, and he would mix paints in his garage. And I think the love that he had for the design and the architecture shined through. And I think when you have that creativity and that passion for something, the business side can, you know, be affected by that. Because he loved it so much, he wanted to put everything into it. He put as much money as he could into the Summit building. I think he overspent when other people were saying, you can scrimp on the glass, you can, you know, put less glass in here and cut costs, but he didn't want to do that. I think he also inspired so many developers. You know, we wrote down a list, you and I, before. There's Burke and Wyatt, Brown and Kaufman in Palo Alto, Stern and Price, Mackey Homes. You did a story once about the Rummers, Robert Rummers' homes in Oregon. The Stoneson brothers, I was trying to research in South San Francisco and San Bruno. They look very similar to Eichler's. And Alliance in Marin, I remember you wrote about that as well.
Yeah, there's no question that the success that Eichler had did inspire a lot of other builders, but you can't attribute it all to him. All you have to do is go through all copies of Sunset Magazine or a lot of publications from the late 40s, and they were all writing about, this is the kind of home, you know, post and beam open plan homes. This is the kind of home people are going to want after the war. So Eichler, I mean, as I said once, you would never have predicted that this guy working in butter and eggs, you know, a refugee from, not a refugee, but, you know, he moved here from New York back in the 20s. You never would have thought he would have succeeded more than anybody else, but he did. But it was in the air back then. You know, yes, a lot of people, like the Rummers, they actually stole Eichler plans. And, you know, some of the other builders, they actually worked with Eichler's same architects. Andrew Allen actually designed for them. Although Eichler made sure they didn't do the same designs. But, you know, they were similar designs. But there's no question that the success Eichler had with doing that did get a lot of other builders to think they could get a piece of it too. But I think one of the things you'll notice if you look at the other builders' homes, and this is true of the Schreng brothers in Sacramento. They've since told me they're sorry they did it, but they didn't just build modern. The only developer, I think, who built a lot of tract homes, who built nothing but modern homes, was Eichler. The Alexanders, they built, you know, standard homes, you know, down in Palm Springs and San Fernando Valley. But it was Eichler who just stuck to it and was the most pure about it. And that, by the way, is why when you visit a lot of these other mid-century modern neighborhoods, they don't look that good these days because the homes weren't as pure. And so it was easier for people not to see, oh, I have a mid-century modern home, and let it go and let the neighborhood go. And that's why the Eichler neighborhoods today really look about the best. I mean, there are some good Mackey neighborhoods and certainly some good Streng ones and certainly some good ones down in Palm Springs. But Eichler's overall, they've done pretty well.
Are the best. I agree. You mentioned that Eichler sold the company. So in 1972, he sold it to, which I think is interesting, that Ned Eichler, he was fired and then went to this other company. And you had written that he might have been an influence in the sale.
Well, I just am surmising because Ned, and I'm not sure, by the way, that Ned was fired. I mean, he worked for his father and he didn't work for his father and he worked for his father. And, you know, they had they certainly butted their heads a lot, you know what I mean? But Ned always loved his dad. But anyhow, yeah, so Ned, he worked for a lot of people. Ned had a major career on his own in many different fields or several different fields, including mortgage. He was a pioneer in the mortgage business. But yeah, he worked for Klingbeil, which was an apartment. I don't know much about it, but they built apartments, I think mostly in the Midwest. And so the fact that Eichler sold to Klingbeil just leads me to imagine that there must have been a Ned connection there. I mean, how else would it have happened? But, so yeah, so I've had people in some of the late Eichler neighborhoods tell me, kind of half jocularly, I don't live in an Eichler home, I live in a Klingbeil. But, you know, if you look at, by that time, Claude Oakland was doing most of the designs. Joe Zander was doing a few. But if you look at the plans that Claude Oakland did for these homes, the late homes, It doesn't say the client wasn't Klingbeil. The client was Joe Eichler, you know, Eichler Associates. So Eichler was still running the show. You know, undoubtedly what happened was Klingbeil bought the company and put money into it to keep it going.
Hmm. And you said he was also working, doing open houses and selling the homes himself.
Yeah, yeah. This one gentleman that I've interviewed quite a few times who was living in an Eichler home at the time in Green Meadow, he had worked for Eichler in several ways, including in marketing. And around 72, 73, maybe even 74, he and his wife were driving around and they saw some Eichlers for sale. And he went into them. And who did he see there in the model home but Joe Eichler himself? I think he said that Lillian was waiting in the car. And Joe Eichler was sitting there and he would show you the home and he'd tell you how good it was and it'd have you sign on the dotted line. And so the guy I'm talking about, Jim Daugherty, he said, well, I didn't know what to think. Was this happy or sad? Is it happy because here we have Joe just doing what he loves and he's still doing it? Or is it sad? Because here's a guy, how Joe used to work, he would call up all of his salespeople on like Sunday in the different subdivisions. He would say, Catherine, how's it going? Selling houses today. He would say, another one, Frank, how's it going? And here he was doing the selling himself. So was it happy or sad? And, you know, I really can't tell what.
I would say it's coming full circle. I think that it's probably very humbling to go from that to doing your own open houses. But I think that's also showing how much he loved them. You know, sometimes you have success and sometimes you're doing open houses. Sometimes you have a team. Sometimes you know, changes can happen. But I think it shows how much he loved the homes and what he was doing.
And that story is not to say that he was doing all the open houses, because even at the end, like, you know, people ask, what was the last, people have told me so many times, oh, I live in the last Eichler, our neighbors, it's hard to say what the last Eichler was, because he was still building four or five communities at the time that he died. There was Los Arboles addition, there were several of them going on right at the very end.
Right. And I love how he diversified. He was doing condos and townhomes. And you were talking about the two townhome areas in Santa Clara. And so he did everything from townhomes, condos, single family. Can you tell us a little bit about why he diversified that way or which neighborhoods were?
Well, he was just really ambitious. He just wanted to build houses for a wide variety of people in different price ranges. And so some of the diversity had to do with the location and site. So for example, in San Mateo Highlands, his largest development by far, he built a number of two stories. That wasn't the only two-story place. Matter of fact, there were some two-story Eichlers a few blocks from where we're sitting. But you know, based on the terrain, he couldn't get the kind of footage he wanted because the lot wasn't big enough, so he had to go up. He wanted to have, like, by doing condos, the price could be lower, there are smaller units, he can get a lot more on a piece of land. You know, this was no longer, as the 60s, you know, went on, there were no longer oodles of empty farmland in the middle of Palo Alto or Santa Clara, so he had to deal with that. Land prices were going up, so he was moving in a way. You know, some of the single family, he planned a lot more condos and, you know, that kind of clustered housing that then got built. If you look at some of the plans for things that never got built, he had plans to build senior housing, you know, senior housing complexes. Like, I think even in San Mateo, I recently wrote about Diamond Heights, where he wanted to do, that was a redevelopment area on what was essentially a very steep cow pasture in the center of San Francisco. And he was one of the developers who was chosen to, he put a bid to build there. And some of his more unique houses are there, including some 3- and 4-story models built right up against really steep slopes. They're attached townhomes, like a lot of San Francisco houses, and they're really quite unique and don't look like much else of what he was doing. But I think he didn't want to be bored. He wanted to do different things.
He was excited about it and was inspired, I think, by a lot of people. And I love how he employed his family members into the company and kept everyone involved. And I know that Steven Eichler is also involved in architecture and building. I know you interviewed him.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he's doing now. He was doing building for a while. He was a builder. I'm not sure what he's up to now. He's very interested in the Eichler heritage. He's he put on one exhibition.
I remember that was at Restoration.
Los Gatos right. Museum.
Right.
And he has a collection of Eichler memorabilia.
And I went to his talk at Restoration Hardware.
All right.
Which was wonderful, too.
So he's Ned's son, and that Ned's other son, David Eichler, has become an architectural photographer of some note.
Great photographer. Yeah, we've worked with him a lot. He's very, very good. Well, this is beautiful. I know everyone listening, you can read a lot of Dave's articles, and we will post a link to some of these preservation societies that you can get involved with. I want to thank you so much, Dave, for everything you've done for this community, and you're so special to us, all of the readers, and you know everyone that loves Eichlers and the history of Eichlers. We want to thank you. I'd love to take this opportunity on behalf of everyone to thank you for your work.
Well, thank you, Monique. It was a lot of fun, and I hope this podcast gets a lot of listeners.
Yes, thank you. And everyone, we will tune in next week. Maybe we can get Stephen Eichler here to do a talk. That would be wonderful. But thank you again, Dave, so much. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you had as much fun learning about the world of mid-century modernism as I did. You can also catch the show on my YouTube channel, where we walk through some of the most stylish mid-century modern homes in California. Just search for Mid-Century Modernism with Monique and hit subscribe. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave me a comment to let me know what you think. Your feedback helps me make the show even better. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on Mid-Century Modernism with Monique.